I don't know about you, but it feels like a lot of my friends are now getting on that baby train. If you have a friend who is also expecting or have little ones still in diapers, I always recommend Pampers Swaddlers. With Pampers Swaddlers, you can also rest assured that this diaper will prevent up to 100% of leaks, even blowouts. Swaddlers has dual leak guard barriers at the legs to help protect where leaks happen most, and they have a blowout barrier, which is an innovative back pocket built into the diaper to help prevent those messy leaks up the back. Did you know that on average, babies will use up to 8,000 plus diapers before becoming potty trained? That is a lot. That's why Pampers Diaper Stash is the hottest baby gift for 2024. So give a gift to a loved one that says, "We see you and we've got you." Pampers Diaper Stash is an online diaper fund that all parents with little ones will love. You can organize friends and family to contribute to a group gift of an online stockpile that never has to run out. Pampers Diaper Stash is great because it takes the guesswork out of choosing what size and how many diapers to gift. It's so easy to do, and it's the gift that always fits. Welcome to ABG, Asian Boss Girl, a podcast for the modern day Asian American woman. My name is Helen.
I'm Janet.
And I'm Mel.
So a topic that comes up frequently in our post-college 20s and 30s when we're freshly moved out of our parents' homes is about the roof over our heads. Where do we live? Are we renting? Are we thinking about buying? What are we looking for in a house? What does your dream house look like? These are questions we've had to think about ever since entering our adult years.
Yes, we are all in pretty different places in our lives. With me owning my first condo and having lived here for about 4 years, Mel having just upgraded to an apartment with her own room and bathroom and washer and dryer unit right outside her door.
Yes, I went from sharing a room with a roommate to getting my own room and sharing a bathroom to now having my own bedroom and bathroom.
Yep, and Helen just becoming a new homeowner of an actual home suburbs.
Yes, where we're recording from today. I learned a lot of things along the way of home buying, which I'll share later on in this podcast. But you know what? Let's talk about when we first moved out of our parents' homes. I'm curious, when was that? Actually, don't know. When was that for the both of you? And what did your first place look like? Did you have any roommates? Do you remember how much you paid for rent? What location it was in? And just overall, like, what was that experience like?
Wow, this takes me back. This is over a decade ago for me. For me, I moved into my first like official like adult home when I got my first job out of college in San Jose, California at Deloitte. So at this time, San Jose usually was known for being mostly like families. Mm-hmm. The office was located in downtown, so there was a small downtown setting, but for the most part, it was pretty dead. And I went out there with like, didn't really know anyone, didn't really know anything. I remember moving up there. My parents helped me and my uncle came along to kind of help move everything in. And I rented just like a small studio space that was close to the office so I could walk to work. At the time, I think it was like 500 square foot and I probably paid like $16.50. Mm-hmm. But also keep in mind that this was like 2008. So that was really expensive for the time. Yeah. And I remember feeling like, oh, I shouldn't, you know, pay this much. And my mom's like, I'd rather you be safe, located mm-hmm. close to work and blah, blah, blah. And I only signed a 6-month lease because I went there wanting to live in San Francisco, but I was like, let me check out San Jose first.
That's smart.
Obviously, San Jose was not popping. So, So 6 months later, I made my way up in SF. This is the second place that I rented and where I spent the next like 4 years of my life. Mm. And honestly, this tiny 290 square foot apartment where my bathroom took up half the space and I only had a mini fridge. Like, literally, this was a tiny, like, I lived in a bedroom, essentially.
Whoa.
What?
And I lived there for 4 years, and some of the best memories of my young adult years were in that apartment, that tiny studio unit. Mm. So that place was actually built mostly for, like, probably people who were working and only living there a couple days a week. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't really meant to be, like, long-term living.
Yeah.
But I was like, look, I prioritize, I would rather be in a good location in SF, and I wanted it to be brand new. I didn't care that it was tiny. So it was brand new. And it was located in a pretty good spot in like Soma. And I had a beautiful view of San Francisco City, but I lived in a tiny 290 square foot space.
Oh my God.
And I had my twin bed from college was what I slept in for 4 years on a like makeshift IKEA mattress. And I paid $12.50 at the time in San Francisco and Soma. That was like unheard of. By the time I moved out 4 years later, I think the rent had like doubled or tripled. But like I said, some of my fondest memories were there. I had a friend, Kristen, who ended up renting right downstairs from me. So we both had our, it was almost like living in a home where you both have your rooms and we would just come together.
That's fun.
And in this tiny bedroom is also because it was like, you know, young adult living there. And I was in San Francisco. I had a lot of visitors through the years. So I would have friends that would come and bring their sleeping bags and I would be able to cram like four visitors in my tiny apartment.
Wait, what? That's what I was going to ask you. Did anyone ever visit you?
Yeah.
Did you ever bring home any boys?
Like, I mean, the guy could, you know, my bed was twin, but we could, you know. But visitors, when friends came, they would just bring their sleeping bags. And it was literally like, imagine 290 square feet where the bathroom is half the space. So like in a small, like 100, you know, square foot, it was my bed and then people's like sleeping bags in the walkway. And that was like literally at nighttime, the whole entire apartment was just to sleep in.
So that's like a hotel room. That's
usually it was tinier than a hotel room. Oh, yeah, yeah. Wow. It was tiny. And my parents, I still remember, even came to visit and they had sleeping bags. This is when they were younger, so they could, you know, but they slept on my floor. And and that apartment is where also I quit my first job at Deloitte and went through my quarter life crisis. And I have all these memories of sitting in that space and, you know, like watching videos, doing research, journaling, going through my like internal, you know, trying to figure out what I wanted to do. This was also where I was going through the like finding myself phase. So I had cut my hair in that bathroom how many times myself. I had played with makeup, tried to figure out my wardrobe, and just really a lot of personal transformation happened in that space for me. That is my habit is in living in tiny spaces, and those were where I spent my formative years.
Wow. Did not know that.
Yeah. I didn't know how small the space was.
Yeah.
So now you know the place I'm living in is actually the biggest place I've lived in ever. And it's tiny.
It's funny because like now I kind of have context as to like, I think Jana must share more about this later, but Hel and I went to her other apartment in Arts District like years later and we're like, oh, it's really small.
Yeah.
But I think it's because if you're used to even a smaller space, that space must be bigger for you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But remember me, Hel and I watched her like, oh, everyone just sat on the floor holding their pizza slices. Remember?
Yeah. Bedroom slash living room slash kitchen. Yes.
Tiny space. That's my jam.
Minimalist living.
Yes.
Very Janet.
How about you, Miss Mel Mel?
I also have two places in mind. My first time moving out of my parents' house was when I was 20, my third year of college, because I was a transfer student. So I transferred into UCSD when I was 20 as a third year, and I was really nervous, but overall really excited to have a place where I can decorate. Like, I remember looking up ideas on Pinterest, how to dress up my dorm, going shopping for my sheets, and my even going to Crate and Barrel to find a specific laundry bag I wanted that was pretty. I don't know, these little things.
Mm-hmm.
And I print out photos to like of my friends to put on the wall. And honestly, like, I did a lot of research, and I think being a transfer student specifically at UCSD, you're really lucky because our dorms were incredibly beautiful and new. So UCSD was known to have, they like created a good experience for transfer students specifically. Mm-hmm. And my dorm was on the 13th floor with a balcony, ocean view, sunset.
Wow.
So dang. I remember being in that room, we're like, how are we paying? How is this our dorm? This is what people pay for to live in San Diego, like for a higher cost. I don't remember how much it was. I just think I want to say it was like the same cost as everyone else living on campus, like living in Ravel. I know your dorms were in the nicest. The
cement walls.
And you visited, that's where Phil used to live, the Ravel housing. So the fact that I think we paid the same amount for that quality was really cool. I would say that, it was just like a really perfect experience. But my second place that I like officially moved out as an adult was when I was 24 after my Wong Fu internship. I was actually living in Irvine with my aunt and uncle, commuting to this area to work for Wong Fu.
Oh my God, that is a drive.
I know.
In traffic, too.
I think when you're young, you're like, you could do it, right?
Yeah, you have the energy.
Yeah, but after my internship ended, I was trying to figure out what to do. I wanted to stay in LA, so I actually moved into San Gabriel Valley.
Mm.
And I was also, again, nervous. This is my first time using Craigslist to find a place.
Mm.
And it was my first time not living with someone I knew or was a mutual friend of someone. So I found a couple on Craigslist that was renting out a room in San Gabriel Valley, and they were like a gay couple, super friendly, and the townhouse was like pretty nicely furnished, but I spent most of my time in the bedroom. But what I do remember was that rent was freaking so good. It was like $575 for a bedroom with a walk-in closet, a mattress included, and including all utilities.
Wow. I did not know you lived in San Gabriel Valley. How long did you live there for?
I lived there for maybe 3 months.
Okay.
Yeah. So it was really brief, but I just didn't want to move back
to the Bay Area quite yet.
Was that the length of your internship?
So my internship in Wangfu ended probably like August, July, and I was there to the end of the year. So I was there for 6 months. Mm. And I was trying to figure out, like, you know, what to do next. So the experience during the San Gabriel Valley place was kind of similar to Janet when she, like, left Deloitte. That was a time where I feel like I was really isolated from everyone, like mm-hmm. my friends back home and like away from the Wangfu team where I felt like I got to see them every day. So I was trying to find my place again. And I remember actually crying a lot in that bedroom, feeling alone, missing my friends from back home. And I would actually, some weekends, I would drive back home because I just felt like I didn't have anyone. There was a time where I remember it's like one of my gray, dark time when I learned how to rely on myself, like, I journaled a lot. Yeah, I would just say that period was a time where I gained a lot of self-care tools. But yeah, that was my San Gabriel Valley experience. I didn't really hang out with my roommates, to be honest. I just felt like we were really polite with each other. But then I would see them in the kitchen and I just kind of like eat by myself, cook, and then I'll go back to my bedroom and just figure out my life. But yeah, that was my first experience, I guess, as an adult in my 20s.
Wow. Both of your experiences are very, very unique. And also just like smaller places, you know, when you first move out of home and it's like, yeah, something that's affordable.
Budget
and
conscious, for sure.
Gives you a new experience in a new city too.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
How about you, Helen?
So for me, I actually lived at home for 3 years after graduating from undergrad. And I made that choice because even though I was interviewing in New York and I really wanted to move to California as well, I found a good job in Boston. So I decided to stay home, save money on rent, on food, and all of my living expenses. Thank you, Mom, for cooking for me like all the time. But to be honest, I felt like because I had sort of made that quote unquote like sacrifice to live at home instead of rushing to get out of the house for this, you know, obviously like after undergrad, you have this excitement of becoming an adult, right? So I knew I was missing out on that. But in hindsight, I did save a lot of money because I was living at home. And because of that, when I eventually moved out of Boston and to LA, I was able to comfortably pay for my own rent, my own car leases, and didn't have to ask my parents for money. So for anyone out there that's listening and feels like they're stuck at home, just know that you're saving money doing that, and you can become independent later on. But in any case, I moved out to LA in 2013, and the first place I lived in was Little Tokyo. And it was honestly one of the best roommate experiences and just locations that I've lived at, because in that location, everything is walkable. You can walk to the Arts District. There's a lot of things in Little Tokyo. And it just felt like the difference between what everyone says about LA, like you have to have a car to get anywhere, versus in Little Tokyo, I felt like I had access to restaurants and grocery stores and bars and things like that. But I found my roommate Evelyn by posting on Facebook and asking if anyone knew anyone moving to LA and if they were looking for roommates. And luckily, one of my friends, Mike, mentioned he went to school with this girl named Evelyn from New York, and she was moving like a week after my arrival date. So it was perfect timing. Wow. And I was there first, so I did all of the legwork looking for places to rent. And then I would like send her messages of what these places look like. And we ended up settling on this two-bed, two-bath place in Little Tokyo. And I still remember like the first time I met her. She was so cute. She was waiting for me outside of this ramen shop, and she was just swinging her legs like, hello. And she was just like so sweet, and honestly such an incredible roommate. She was there for me through all my boy drama, which y'all know about, I think. Listen to the episode Me and Philip. She taught me about like different luxurious skincare products because she really took care of her skin and had all of like the really nice high-end products that I would never buy other than like samples from Sephora. But I was able to try all her stuff. She was an amazing cook and super clean too, which I definitely appreciated after having many more roommates after her. But she also introduced me to a lot of her friends in LA, and that made me feel very welcome because I know when people move here, it is difficult to meet people that you might feel like you can relate to or feel like you can belong into the group right away. I will definitely say that because a lot of my other friends that have moved here have felt that it was difficult to find their friend groups. So she introduced me to a lot of her friends, made me feel very welcome. We took like trips throughout like Arts District, and her friend would tell us like, oh, here's like the restaurant, like the history behind the Arts District and all this stuff. And we got tours all around LA, and it was super nice. But yes, that was my first living experience in LA and moving out of my house.
That sounds so much fun.
Yeah.
Like, and Evelyn, I mean, we met her a couple times. She sounds like a really good roommate. And yeah. I think it's cool how you kind of like both kind of found each other. Like, how is it, like, what are the chances you find someone that's moving a week after you from the East Coast?
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
I think it's a good point and a tip for those who are moving out to a new city, mm-hmm. especially across the country. If you're going to find a roommate, someone that you feel like you could drive with, and then because the people you meet through them mm-hmm. will be very good potentials for your own circle. Mm-hmm. I will say that that was a thing I did not think about at all. Like when I went out to San Jose, probably a part of the reason why I really didn't, because I didn't know anyone. Mm-hmm. And it was kind of by chance that I reconnected with Kristen in San Francisco. But mm-hmm. outside of her, I didn't make an active effort to like expand my friend group.
Yeah.
And it kind of happened organically. But I think that if you set, like, that's a big thing that people maybe don't think about.
Mm-hmm.
And I think really changes the dynamic of your experience.
Oh, for sure.
This is really cool because, like, I feel like we don't really talk much about, like, our housing experiences, like, mm-hmm. prior to, like, I don't know, the last 4 years. So, like, right now, as you guys are both telling your stories, I'm, like, pinning the different timelines of both where you guys were at in my head. Because I was like, oh, yeah, Janet, I remember her, like, the San Jose thing, then going to SF. And I was like, but then I remember Helen, I was like, oh, 2013, like, that was only a year before we met.
Yeah.
So I'm, like, trying to, like, place all these things in my head right now. But
before
that's really
our
cool.
lives intersected.
Exactly.
And became fully integrated with each other.
Yeah. Question. So as someone who, like, as a transplant moving into, like, let's say Los Angeles, how did you decide on Little Tokyo? And also, where did you stay that 1 week before she came?
Oh, yeah. No, good question. So I actually stayed with my aunt.
Okay.
So my mom's side of the family lives here. Mm. And the reason why I've always been so attracted to California is because we would visit every summer.
Mm.
And I would, I'm like, palm trees. I want the palm trees in my life outside my window. So I always knew I wanted to move to California. But Little Tokyo is because Evelyn actually had a friend named John who lived in Arts District. And she said, you know, this is a good spot. It's easy, you know, walkable distance to different places if we're not going to get a car right away. And we did look at, like, Mid-City, West Side,
mm-hmm.
and Little Tokyo. And I think at the end of the day, it was just pricing.
Yeah.
Pricing. I think we probably paid, like, I want to say, like, $1,350 per person.
Damn,
for our
so
two-bed, two-bath.
Yeah. That's pretty,
really
that's
good.
That's really good.
Yeah, it's probably a lot higher now because there's been so much gentrification in that area. But yeah, it just came down to location, proximity to friends, and bars and restaurants and shops and things like that.
No, it's a prime location. I have one more question. I've always been curious because I think my whole life I lived on the, like, west. I lived in California my whole life. So moving north out of SoCal is just like a car with stuff. But then moving from East Coast, did you guys get a moving truck? Like, how did you move all your stuff?
Yeah. What did you bring and how did you get it over?
I think I want to say I only had like 3 suitcases. I need to look back at, I have a photo of when I was leaving my parents' house and Annie took a photo, and that photo always pops up on Facebook. It's like, here's a memory of when you left home.
Yeah,
I'm like,
yeah.
Oh my God, this is so sad. But I only had 1 suitcase in that photo. I'm pretty sure I had like 2 other ones.
Mm.
And I did not bring, obviously, like sofa, no furniture or anything that. It was just clothes.
Mm.
And then when I got there, I lived at my aunt's place for a week and then had to find a place first, and then we just slowly bought furniture. Yeah, it's just packing up your life and moving. I mean, my bedroom at home was just like my childhood frozen in time. So everything was still there, and it is still there. My mom like kept everything there just in case I ever move back. I'm like, Mom, you know I'm never moving back, right? I bought a house here.
Yeah.
My dad's like, I'll buy you a house, move back. I'm like, no, you move here, I'll buy you a house.
That's true. What's different is I feel like Helen's stuff was like very planned, right?
Yeah.
Like you're like, you stayed at home, save money, and then you made this really big cross-country move, and it was like everything was thought out, and you had a roommate. I feel like Mel and I were
figuring
same,
out
same state, and then just kind of like, and then doing like 6 months here, 3 months here, because I always was just like, I had a thing with San Francisco and I just wanted to be there, and I never thought about like, who do I know there, am I gonna be able to, like, you know, I was just so focused on like, I'm gonna, you know, work there and I'm gonna live there, and I didn't like plan anything else out.
I mean, that was kind of the same for me. I had no friends here. I didn't know anyone here. Like, even I Philip, like, we stayed very distant friends. And so I didn't even think about him as like someone to reach out to when I got here.
Yeah.
He was the one to reach out to me. Let me put that on the record. He texted me. It was like, oh, you moved to LA. But I think, you know, I was very lucky to have someone like Evelyn who already had some, you know, deep rooted connections with people here. Like, she was friends with Dan already.
Yeah.
So
that's
small
really
world.
Cool. That's
because
I
actually met Dan from like a college thing way back as well. So I was like, oh, Dan, good to see you again. Like, you're part of this friend group. And then, yeah, very lucky to have had her as my first roommate. I don't know about you, but it feels like a lot of my friends are now getting on that baby train. If you have a friend who is also expecting or have little ones still in diapers, I always recommend Pampers Swaddlers. With Pampers Swaddlers, you can also rest assured that this diaper will prevent up to 100% of leaks, even blowouts. Swaddlers has dual leak guard barriers at the legs to help protect where leaks happen most. And they have a blowout barrier, which is an innovative back pocket built into the diaper to help prevent those messy leaks up the back. Did you know that on average, babies will use up to 8,000 plus diapers before becoming potty trained? That is a lot. That's why Pampers Diaper Stash is the hottest baby gift for 2024. So give a gift to a loved one that says, "We see you and we've got you." Pampers Diaper Stash is an online diaper fund that all parents with little ones will love. You can organize friends and family to contribute to a group gift of an online stockpile that never has to run out. Pampers Diaper Stash is great because it takes the guesswork out of choosing what size and how many diapers to gift. It's so easy to do, and it's the gift that always fits.
So we've just gone over our first kind of living experiences and situations. What about after that? How many more places have you lived in, and what's your living situation like now?
So in San Gabriel Valley was like my first like living as an adult in LA. I actually moved back home to the Bay Area after that because I wanted to save money because I was producing at the time and I could work remotely. But I missed LA. I knew LA after that. After reflecting, I knew LA was a place to be for my career. So I moved back down.
So you were home for a year?
I was home for maybe 2 months and I couldn't do it.
Oh,
I was
okay. Like, and you were still working your job at Wong Fu?
No. So after Wong Fu ended, during San Gabriel Valley, I was kind of like in my gray transition period. So I was interning at this PR agency in downtown LA. I was commuting. And at the same time, I was also working with Eric producing, like in tour managing.
Okay.
And so I made the jump when the year ended. I was like, you know what? I don't want to do PR. This is not my scene. So I talked to Eric. He let me work from home, like in the Bay Area, to save money on rent for like 2 months. Yeah. Because I traveled a lot for work. So just flying out of SFO. But after, you know, doing that for a few months, realized it's not the thing for me. I need to move back to LA and I want to find my full-time job in LA. Mm-hmm. So that's when I connected with some of my college friends, Benson and Christine, and end up rooming with them in LA. And I moved into this like complex called Park La Brea. And honestly, I was like, oh my gosh, this is like my first place in the city of LA. It was right next to LACMA in like mid-Wilshire area. And I felt very like, oh shoot, like I'm in LA. Like this is the things you see in the movies, right? I felt like I was in a really prime location. I walked to the Grove sometimes. I had a good sunset view, but the reality hit and the rent was freaking expensive. Oof. Like I was jobless, by the way, when I lived here. So I worked out this like deal with my mom and I had to share a bedroom with Christine and it was $750 to share a room, not including utilities.
Oof. Wow.
And we shared a bathroom too because I obviously didn't make any income. I would say it also sucked because I didn't realize cockroaches were a thing. My kitchen was infested with cockroaches.
Oh my goodness.
And I honestly got used to it. That's just so sad. But like we would ask our maintenance people, they'll come in and it didn't do much. So literally you'll turn off the lights, you turn on, you see all the cockroaches scatter away. Like that was my experience. I mean my first LA apartment. My second place I moved was just a few blocks away because then Benson moved out and then my roommate, now you've met, Darlene, moved in and ended up sharing a room with her and Christine got her own room. But that place, you know, didn't had less cockroaches. But I think during this second place, I realized I wanted my own space. And what I did was, so Dar and I shared a room. I bought these rods from Walmart or whatever and got these curtains and I kind of like curtained off my section of the room.
Yeah, I forgot about that.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
But the thing is, our room was oddly shaped. So like I only had like a small area where I slept in. It was like, I don't know how small it was. Maybe like the size of like Helen's bathroom.
I'm thinking about like a hospital situation where you close off your bed.
Honestly, it was kind of like that. Yeah. So, I mean, I didn't have that much space, even though I was still paying like $800 to share that room still. I would say that, you know, I think living in that space, I feel like Christina kind of outgrew like living with each other. So Dar and I like, okay, we're going to start living together by ourselves. And so Darlene and I finally found our third place, which is the one I've been living at in the past 4 years that I really loved. And I finally got my own bedroom.
Yes.
I can't describe how much that changed the game for me because I will say, like, reflecting back, you know, living my other places, I felt this sense of insecurity because I shared a bedroom And honestly, when you're dating and like talking to people, you're like, oh, I share a bedroom. It's just kind of weird to like, it's just kind of, it's kind of disadvantage, right? So I felt really insecure about that. But the place Dara and I found was super affordable living in LA. I paid, honestly, I'll just share, I paid $11.50 for rent for my own bedroom, a shared bathroom. I had to share the parking spot, and I know freaking AC for the 2 years, and I don't have a washer dryer. But I think for living in LA, it was pretty affordable.
Yeah,
I would say I probably love that place the most, and I could have stayed there as long as I can. But then Dar and I were just talking about like, oh, what if it's like to move somewhere else? And she stumbled upon our new place, and we just recently moved in a few months ago. So now I'm in a new apartment, or I guess townhouse or condo. Townhouse. It has 3 floors. But now I live with her and her boyfriend. So I live with a couple, forever third wheeling. And I have a temporary roommate, Benson, who is my first roommate in my first LA place, living with us for a month. And I feel like really upgraded. Didn't expect it. I have a 2-car garage now. And like Janet mentioned in the intro, I have a freaking washer and dryer.
I used to
tell people like, yo, you know you made in LA when you got a washer and dryer unit and a parking in a parking spot. So I really feel like we definitely upgraded from the past 4 years. So that was my walkthrough of all my my places I lived in Los Angeles.
It's just such a, like a scrappy story. You know, you really like starting by living in a random house with this couple in a bedroom, and then sharing a bedroom for, it's like dorm living because you're sharing a bedroom, but in your adult years, like while you're working. I commend you for being able to do that. I don't know if I would have been able to do that.
I was going to say that's a testament to how like much you wanted to be in LA. That A, when you were, because it's, I know the struggle of trying to find a place to live when you don't have a job, but you feel like you need to be there to get the job. It's a catch 22, right? So then you have, you're like, okay, then I need to, on a budget, find a place to live that's cheap as possible, but also I need to be able to withstand the living conditions, right? And that's where it's like you sacrifice and you are like, I'm going to share a room with someone. So,
and also knowing you as someone who needs her space, like that's
tough.
That's tough.
That's true. It's funny because like I feel like looking back though, like I think the places that I moved into transformed as I did too. Because I think at that time I was like, I love being around people. Oh my God, let's do this. Yeah. I don't mind sharing a room. But now I'm just like, no, I really need my own space where I am at now. But I will say like, you know, reflecting back on everything, it made me appreciate what I have now because I learned how to like kind of like pinch and save on what I can. And like the amount of space I have now, I'm just like, oh my God, this is so much more than I ever really need. So it kind of like put me in check or be more like grateful for what I have now.
I love that.
How about you, Helen, after Little Tokyo, what was next?
Well, so after Evelyn moved out, she decided to move back to New York after a year of living in Little Tokyo. I stayed at the same place and lived with this other girl for another year in the same location. I would say very different living experiences. But in 2015, I moved out to Santa Monica with another, a different roommate. And even though it was kind of far from downtown LA and areas where all my friends were, I loved living close to the beach. I think especially as an East Coaster, that's the thing when you're moving to LA, you're like, I want to be by the beach. I want to be where the sun is. Palm trees. I know it's like very stereotypical LA, but I was like in love, and I was only 0.8 miles from the beach. So I would go for runs in the mornings or after work or on weekends and just run from Santa Monica past the pier up north to Pacific Palace Days and back. And just like the energy that you get from the people that are there, like being working out, feeling good about themselves, sweating, you know, it was just so nice and so invigorating for me. So the place that I had was a townhouse, and it was pretty spacious. We had a 2.5 bath, 2-bedroom, huge living room, which we never ended up using at all. And I think rent might have been like $1,800 per person.
That's
for
not
that location. Yeah, it was really good, especially for Santa Monica and living pretty close to the beach. And my roommate and I, we would work out together. We did BBG, the Kayla Itzine BBG. We started doing that together. We went out in Santa Monica, and it was just like a really, really good time. And that went from 2015 to 2017. And then once my lease was up, I was starting to look again for a new roommate, a new location, because Lori moved, I think she moved back home for a little bit. But during that time, Philip and I, we were starting to get more serious too. So I think I might have lived at my aunt's for maybe a week, because I remember that drive from San Gabriel Valley to downtown was just terrible. It was like an hour and a half sometimes. And while I was looking for a place, I think I was looking in like K-Town and downtown, Philip was like, why don't you just move in with me? And I was like,
oh shit.
Is this the moment? Are we forcing this too fast? But yeah, I think after a week he was like, yeah, just move in with me. So we've lived in downtown LA together for 4 years now.
Dang.
Which, yeah, I have so many good memories in that spot. And I still remember, like, when I first moved in there, I was like, okay, you have nothing on the walls. This is not decorated. Like,
it's like a bachelor pad.
Yeah. I was like, can I put a Helen touch on this? And he's kind of just like, no, I'm going to be moving out at some point. Like, I want to keep it as pristine and original as possible. So I was like, okay, your spot. I must follow what you say.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it was a super nice condo, and we still, I said we because we married now, but we still own it. And now, you know, we just recently moved into a house together that we bought together. So, yeah, that's my living situation.
Yeah. And this home that you have, you guys bought and you totally renovated in like 2 months, right?
Yeah.
And I will say, I can definitely see the Helen touch because I
think,
yeah, like I can see the stark difference between the downtown LA condo. Like, no, I mean, because it was like a bachelor pad,
yeah,
right? And to be fair, like, it did change when you moved in because you like themed it up a bit and you know, all that kind of stuff. But to some degree, yeah, you were like trying to keep that. That was like his space, right?
Right, yeah, yeah.
And this is like truly now both of your spaces. Mm-hmm. And I feel like you really like led a lot of the renovation and the style picking and all of that. And I can, it feels more Helen.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Dude, I just have to say that like you walking through your different places, I was like, I didn't realize you and Phil lived together for 4 years, first of all. And thank you for moving that a vase of sticks he had. I was like, what was that? But second, when Helen talks about our Santa Monica place, I actually have really good memories of that place too.
Yeah,
that's when
first started hanging out.
Yeah, I think that's why like there's a special like you know, we had an episode about people, places, and things, and you have certain memories. I think when I talk about like when I lived in San Gabriel Valley, I felt very like in a low place because I didn't find, all my friends were back home.
Yeah.
Helen was my first friends I actually made in LA. And then Santa Monica was the place we always met up.
Mm.
So there's so many times that Helen's like, just come over, do your laundry here. And then I would sleep over a lot too.
Yeah.
And then her space was like, she had a freaking huge room with this gigantic TV show, blast Usher on.
The biggest closet I've ever had in all my living situations in LA.
Yeah. It was it was a really good spot.
Yeah.
Wait, where were you living, Mel, when you guys were hanging out when she was in Santa Monica?
I was in my little, my hospital area.
Your little curtained off room.
Yeah. So I think that's why, like, I went, like, I had a small space, but going to Helen's, I'm like, oh my God, it's so big.
Yeah,
it's so nice.
Yeah.
But the lighting in there, like, everything was, like, really great. Mm-hmm. But so when you moved out, I was like, dang, that's a nice place, though.
I know.
But good reason.
Yes, that was a great place to live. What about for you, Jay, after San Jose? I feel like you've lived in many places.
Yeah, so I actually haven't sat down and logged in everything of where I lived ever, actually. So this was an interesting preparation process. So after San Jose / San Francisco, I left in 2011. So I spent like 4 years there. So from 2011 and I moved into my current place 2017. Over those 6 years, I moved 14 times.
Oh my freaking what?
So let me, are we ready for the list? I wrote it all down. Do you want to hear
Give
it?
Us the list.
Yeah.
Okay. So after San Francisco, this is where I was trying to make my transition into advertising, right? So once I made the decision to apply to the program, I was going to leave San Francisco, but I had 2 months before the program started. So I came back to Orange County, and you're going to hear Orange County multiple times throughout my list. And thank goodness to my parents, who were kind enough to let me just crash there rent-free and financially help me out. So after San Francisco, I went to OC back for 2 months, and then I went to Miami for the program for 10 weeks. After Miami, the plan was to transition to New York, but I hadn't got there yet. So then I went back to Orange County for 3 months while I was figuring that out. And then I moved to New York for 8 months to try to go into advertising and live in New York City. Did not work out. Made the decision to come back to Orange County for another 6 months, where I lived. Then I was applying to jobs in advertising, but in LA.
Mm-hmm.
So before committing, I got a job in Santa Monica, and I was commuting from Orange County to Santa Monica for about 3 to 6 months. And once I knew that job was going to last for a while, I then subleased and I rented a bedroom out of a home that a woman owned in Santa Monica for about 6 months while I worked down the block. So there are two times now where I, in the past 6 years, where I rented a bedroom. And what I did was I prioritized a location so that the commute was shorter to where I needed to go for work. And I also, keep in mind that I did a lot of this transition while I was older. So by like late 20s, early 30s, I craved having my own space, and I also wanted like a nicer spot, right? Mm-hmm. And so I was willing, so the best setups for me were living with older people who like owned their homes or units, and they were just renting out a bedroom. So, and because they had nicer homes located close to where I needed to work, but it also made a very awkward social life for me. So I was actually a lot of like, I moved around a lot, and I would randomly hang out with people, but I never had people over, you know, sometimes I did when I was dating, but yeah, so I lived with this woman who was like in her 40s, and just rented a bedroom and lived there for 6 months. And then this is when I then made the decision that I was going to leave advertising and go into Chinese medicine. While I was preparing for that, I went back to Orange County for 2 months. Once I applied to Chinese medicine school and figured out where I was going, I went and rented a tiny place in mid-city. This was near like Carthay Circle or something. So it's probably kind of aroundish the area of
Disneyland.
Carthay Circle. Carthay Circle. It's like it's kind of near like the LACMA-ish area.
Okay. I'm thinking about Cathay Pacific Airlines. Sorry, go ahead.
And I ended up living there for, I think I signed like a six to 12 month lease, but it was in that apartment that I realized that I also was not going to be able to do Chinese medicine and was going to transition to do UX. So I lived there for about, I think like 3 to 6 months. And then I ended up Airbnb-ing at the place for the remainder while I was making that transition into UX. And then once I made the transition into UX, I think I might have went back to OC for another 2 months. And then once I landed a job in UX, I came back and I subleased a place in Little Tokyo for 2 months, took over this girl's rent. There was drama that I did not know about until I got into the place. I interviewed her. I was like, I just need this place for a little bit. She's like, yeah, you could just take over my lease with my roommate. It's totally cool. Everything's fine. The moment I transitioned the lease, their faces changed. And she was like, this bitch is blah, blah, blah. And like, I don't know. Can you send her this message? I found myself in between these two like fighting roommates who did not get along. And I was like, I did not sign up for this. I just need a room to live in.
Yeah.
So that was an interesting experience, but I was only there for 2 months. And then I ended up subleasing a place in the in Arts District where I really liked, but took over another girl's lease for 6 months. And then at this point I was like working in UX, but like working in contract jobs. So spent 6 months here, 6 months there. And when I switched locations, the next agency I worked at was closer. It was all on the west side. So I always was in this dynamic where I loved living in downtown, but I would have to drive so far for work when I was working in UX. So then I was like, fine, I will sublease in Santa Monica. And this is where I rented a room for another 6 months, similar situation, but this time it was an older dude who owned a very nice condo in Santa Monica and was renting out a bedroom. Now I know it sounds shade, sounds super shade, but I checked out his references. He even was like, if you want to call like other women that I've had live here, because like I just keep a really nice room and people who are like either old, like grad students or young working professionals. So I did that and it was nice, but it still felt kind of weird. Like I never felt endangered. It was safe, but it just didn't, I would always just ended up hanging up in my bedroom, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So after 6 months, I was like, ugh, can't do this anymore. I would rather just like do the commute and live in downtown. So move back to the Arts District. And this is where I signed a lease and was there for 3 years before finally stabilizing my UX career, landing a full-time paid position where I was making enough income where I'm like, okay, now I think I'm ready to settle down and purchase. And that's where I then found my place in South Park and moved there and have been there for 4 years.
So that's girl, you lost me in New York.
I didn't realize, like, when we say that's Janice, insane. The transition person, like, dude, 14 oh places?
Wait, so many, like, questions, and I feel like this could be its own, like, podcast episode, but what did you bring, like, what was your suitcase box situation to move now from you one guys, place to the other?
Now you ladies know why I'm such a minimalist, because after moving that many times, I hate having things clutter up, because every time you move, you have to clean all that shit
up. Right,
right. But also, to be fair, like, luckily for me, my parents live in Orange County, so I was able to store any large items. But honestly, the moment I started moving a lot, I just never committed to furniture. This is why always subleasing was better for me, because they already had a bed, they already had furniture, and I just needed a place to crash so that I could be close to work, right? And then eventually when I would move into my own space, I still carry that mentality that I'm never going to be here for a long time. So I never want to save things, and I'm always in the habit of like throwing things away or cleaning shit out.
Yeah,
like moving 14 times in 6 years also means that I was budget conscious, so I'm always used to living in tiny spaces. My current apartment is 740 square feet. It is the largest space that I've lived in besides my parents' home, like where I crashed a couple of times, right? But in my own personal space, I'm used to small spaces.
Wow. For anyone out there who's looking for a location to live in SoCal, Jen has lived in all of them. What's your least favorite location and favorite location?
I have to say I didn't like my place in Mid-City. And this is a the perks of being in Mid-City is that you can get anywhere pretty quickly, west side, east side, right? But I felt landlocked. The thing that I like about living in downtown is you're close to buildings and mountains. And then when you're in Santa Monica or by the beach on the west side, you're near the ocean. But when you're just in the middle, I feel like I can't see any natural stuff. So I just feel like I'm just around homes suburb homes. So not even like big buildings and things like that.
Yeah, I can see that being a mid-city person.
Yeah. Favorite location?
Arts District, hands down. That is still my favorite location to date. I didn't end up buying out there because I couldn't afford things out there. But I love the Arts District.
I can see that.
Wow.
Damn. 14.
I'm like, New York lost me there. Wow. That is impressive. If anyone needs moving tips, hit up Janet.
Yep. Hi, ABGs and ABBs. It's Janet here, checking in to see if you've had your annual physical yet. I know doctor visits may have been pushed off a bit this past year, but now is a good time to make sure you're keeping current on your annual visits. If you don't know where to start, you can download the free ZocDoc app. It's the easiest way to find a great doctor and instantly book an appointment. With ZocDoc, you can search for local doctors who take your insurance, read verified patient reviews, and book an appointment in person or video chat, all directly in the app. Their database contains primary care physicians, dentists, dermatologists, psychiatrists, eye doctors, and other specialists. Their doctor profiles are my favorite part. They are very detailed, with a photo of the doctor, their bio, ratings which detail the average wait time, their bedside manner, and verified patient reviews. If you're someone who likes to research your doctors before booking an appointment, this is a great platform for you. ZocDoc makes healthcare easy. Now is the time to prioritize your health. Go to ZocDoc.com/ABG and download the ZocDoc app to sign up for free and book a top-rated doctor. Many are available as soon as today. That's ZocDoc.com/ABG.
So when we were kids, do you remember playing that game MASH? This game where it's written on a piece of paper that showed you who you'd end up with, your occupation, the type of car you'd have, the number of kids, including, you know, and MASH stood for mansion, apartment, shack or shelter, or house. Did you both play that as well?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. I used to play MASH a lot with friends and with my cousins.
I played all the time as elementary school. I felt that was like the first like matchmaking thing you could rely on.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. You put down all the boys you like.
Hell yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I focus on that. Let's be real.
Do you remember when you were a kid, like what your dream house would look like of the MASH? Was it a mansion, apartment, shelter, or house?
I always wanted a mansion. I feel like most people wanted that. Just like, you know, you're like, I want to live in the biggest place, right? And I always dreamed of living in a mansion with 6 to 8 kids.
Oh my, whoa.
So let me give you context, because I grew up in the time of watching Full House and Seventh Heaven, and I always fantasized about what it was like to live in a big community with people that were really close to me, like a big space and just like always lively and the home is buzzing with lots of people around. Obviously I wasn't thinking very practically, 6 to 8 kids is, you know, but I remember that was like kind of the dream. I always wanted the mansion and I want the, you know, most kids. And I actually think for job, like career or whatever profession, I like stuff that was like organization based, so it's like admin or like librarian or I don't know, like information and organization based type stuff. And obviously that was back then, I was very fantasy driven. And fast forward like 20 years and you understand the concepts of everything. I actually went from wanting a big home and lots of kids to just wanting a small space. And I thought my ideal situation would be to live in a big city, like a metropolitan area, have a condo and just me and my partner, and then maybe have like 1 to 2 kids. That vision has evolved a bit in the last like 2 years now, where now I'm like, you know, I actually do think I would like to embrace a more suburban area, but still one to two kids, but just a bigger space so that I could have family and visitors come. But yeah, I don't know. That was my kind of like the evolution of my MASH fantasies to reality. How about you, Mel?
Surprisingly, for my MASH like fantasy, I think I actually stayed pretty consistent since I was a child. When I was really young, yeah, it'd be nice to get the mansion. I just didn't want the shack. I was like, no, don't give me the shack. If I landed a house, I would be okay with that. I was like, yeah, that sounds good. I think when I was younger, all I wanted was a house that was one story with nice decor, and I didn't need to have a pool. Like, I don't know why. As a kid, I just remember, like, I want what I had growing up. Like, I didn't want stairs because I didn't want to walk. So I always knew. So I think as a kid, well, and I'll go into like what I want now, but just wanted a simple one-story house that was nicely decorated. I wanted one husband. I mean,
wait, what?
With my dream man, a husband, I just wanted two kids. And honestly, what I want is still the same.
Yeah.
So the only difference now is I'm more focused on what I want my house to look like. Mm. Now I know I'm a big fan of big windows and natural lighting, because when it's dim, I am hella lazy and not productive. Mm. So I just think it's funny, like, looking back at like MASH and looking at what I want now. Like, even as a kid, I knew I didn't want to get married until I was in my 30s. Mm. I always wanted only two kids, and I never really strayed away from that. And I wanted just a house. So I think when it comes to like the family life or a house, I didn't really like focus on that. I was like, I knew I just want a house and maybe in the suburbs, and that was it. Like, I never dreamed about living in the city. Like, maybe it's a goal I think about now, but no, I still want the same thing.
And the walking up the stairs, very consistent, Mel.
I don't want that stuff. But yeah. And oh, one thing I want to add, I feel like it's the thing I appreciate now in a dream house. It is really cool when you go to someone's house in their backyard, like the doors that open up completely to the backyard.
Oh yeah, those are expansive, those doors.
Yeah, but that's it.
The ones that disappear into the wall, right?
Yeah. Ugh,
those are so expensive.
I know, it's so cool.
What if a bird flies in?
Oh.
Okay, I'm going to change my dream. We'll see. But how about you, Helen?
I think for me, my dream house was probably... It's hard to say, because I think as a kid, you don't really see that many houses. It was whenever I was at a nice house, or when I played with like a giant dollhouse that had many rooms, and I'd be like, I want to live in this house. But I think without like social media growing up and the ability to know what super nice houses look like, and only being provided with the environment that you had, for me, when I think about this question, I'm just like, I want to have a tight-knit space with my grandparents, parents, and sister, and like, knowing that I would want a loving house wherever it was, or whatever it was that I grew up in. And tangibly, I remember thinking I wanted a big yard, because my sister and I grew up playing on gravel that was a parking lot in our backyard, which is where I got proposed at. But I always admired like the lush green spaces that my aunts or friends would have living in the suburbs. So that was the one thing I remember I wanted in a dream home. Obviously now as an adult, I know what nice homes look like, and I think I would love like a farmhouse styled, clean, contemporary home with a huge backyard and just enough rooms for everyone. Like, I don't want it to be too big, like the M in MASH, the mansion. I don't think I want a mansion. I just want to have a big enough house that everyone has their own room, and I don't have to like scream to reach anyone, you know? Just big enough where, everyone has their own room, and maybe like an office space. And I think that's all I need. And of course, like the big backyard, so that ideally like our future kids can play there safely, and we can house like barbecues and whatnot. But I think the house that we just bought right now, we definitely see it as more of a starter home. It's pretty nice. It's definitely big enough for the two of us and for when we plan to expand. But when we first bought this house, we did say that this would be a 5-year home commitment. And hopefully in the next 5 years, we'll be at a different financial point in our lives, and we'll buy a bigger house in a location with a better school district, with a yard. And that will be more of what our dream home would be like, you know, that maybe we'll also house like our parents if they want to like be there to help take care of the kids and whatnot. So I think we're working towards that dream house, and this is like a step towards it, the house that we're in now.
It's a big step, I think.
It's a huge step. Yeah. I see your aesthetic of that farmhouse, but like modern, and the prioritization of outdoor space to play, because you guys have a really nice backyard, and I could tell that you put energy into that. So now it makes sense that is you prioritize having a good, safe outdoor play space.
I see it too. Like a lush green, like very beautiful.
Yeah.
At the garden.
But then I want to like take care of it, because I know it's a lot of maintenance.
It's a lot of work.
Fake grass.
Well, as women now in our 30s, I'm sure we've all picked up some things here and there about taking care of our finances and making sure we can pay our rent on time. And if we're, you know, have a dream home in mind, that we're able to effectively save for that. What are two tips you ladies have picked up along the way that you can share with our listeners?
One tip I would say is have a budget sheet where it breaks down your essential costs. And for me, I have that and I fill it out at the end of every month just to make sure I'm not going over my budget. There are some times I do, you know, but it just puts me in checks. I'm like not overspending what I can. So that way, my second tip is that way when you have an investment account, you could deposit into every month and put a decent amount that goes into like your dream, a house or a wedding. So that's what I do.
Yeah, I would very similar to what Mel just said. Track your spending. So I used Mint for many, many years, and that was super helpful because you can just log in all of your credit cards and just use your credit cards too for points, obviously. But when you do that, you can kind of just have it organize itself, and then at the end of the month you can see what is it that you're spending on and look at like the non-essentials. Are you spending on these non-essential categories and going over your budget? And my second thing along the same lines, try and follow the 50-20-30 budget rule, which states that 50% of your after-tax income can be spent on essentials and obligations that you have or must do, like rent, mortgage, insurance, food, utilities, and then 20% on savings and debt repayment, and 30% for splurging and self-care. Obviously, this might not apply to everyone. I think I probably saved more than I splurged, but everyone's circumstances are different. And if you're looking for a simple rule of thumb, try that one out, the 50-20-30 rule. 50 for needs, 20 for savings, 30 for wants.
Mm. Oh, these are such great tips. I wish I had you ladies when I was younger. My two tips would be, if you're renting, this plays into finances as well, but don't commit to a 6 to 12 month lease unless you feel like it is where you want to be. Because I've been in situations where you lock yourself in and you're not happy and it's not worth paying that much. The second tip I would have for anybody who's looking to maybe buy a home for the first time, and especially for our listeners out there, if you're a young working professional and you might be investing in just like a small condo, your first one, it can be kind of like overwhelming to figure out like, what can I afford? I think the best rule of thumb is to start by working backwards, which is how much can you afford to, on a monthly basis, that you feel comfortable paying, that you're like now paying in rent, right? Like think of the max that you're willing to part with. From your paycheck, and then go a little below that. Like, always give yourself buffer, because there's going to be costs that you're not considering, like property tax and homeowner's insurance. And of course, as a first-time homeowner, you will get some back in taxes, but I wouldn't depend on that when making your calculations. To just be more stress-free, think about how much you're willing to part with on a monthly basis to pay for mortgage, and then go below that. And then calculate backwards, like, what is that total amount then to the total price of a home I should be looking at?
Good suggestion. Yes.
All right, Helen, I know you went through a lot of paperwork and headache going through your first home buying experience. Can you walk our listeners through what was that like, and what else can you share with our listeners for tips on buying their first home?
Yeah, it was definitely an eye-opening experience, and one that I feel like I got a quick crash course in, because we started looking at the end of January of this year and we closed on April 1st. So a lot of things happened in that period of time. But a few things that I learned that I would recommend for home buyers to know or look into, and I think I only have two, but I'll go into details of the two. First is, make sure you have consistent employment for 2 years. And what I mean by that is that you need at least 2 years to prove your income or employment history in order to obtain a traditional loan that is close to market rate. So I'll be fully transparent with our listeners out there. I had a good amount of savings that I'd saved up for 10 years working in finance, and I was like so ready to buy my first house. I was like, I got money, let's go. And between Philip and I, you know, we are putting in equal amounts from our savings to this house that we're sharing. And it turned out that because I quit my job in March of 2020, which was less than 2 years ago, I had switched from a W-2 to self-employment, and I was not eligible to apply for a traditional loan. So with our house, we did a 20% down payment, and you take out a loan for the remaining 80%, which is your mortgage, right? I couldn't co-sign that loan for the 80% mortgage with Philip because I had only 1 year of current employment status. So that was like a huge shocker for me. And the down payment had to all come out of Philip's bank account, which I swear was not intentional. Okay. So basically, I mean, I'm paying for all of like the home renovations and mortgage payment and whatnot. It's definitely equaled out by now, but And we do keep track of our finances and we have a joint account together now. But that was one lesson that I had not heard anyone talk about before. Mm-hmm. So make sure that if you're about to buy a house, you have 2 years of consistent employment status, whatever it is. Another thing that we learned is that flipping a house is a very good option if you have the time and the ability to pay your renovation costs up front. Mm-hmm. Obviously, you could take a loan out for your renovations, but it is best if you can just pay all that up front. So for us, we were looking for turnkey homes, which are newly renovated homes. And honestly, like, this post-pandemic housing market is just insane right now, as I'm sure you all know out there. On average, I looked this up, the housing prices in the US increased 13%, and in California, it increased about 30%. And that's an increase if you're looking at, so the median price for homes in California increased from $626,000 to $819,000. That is a lot of freaking money in a year. That's a huge difference. So pricing is insane, but because supply is limited and demand is super high right now, like for us, when we were looking at homes, we honestly had less than a week to put in an offer for these homes, or else they'd be gone and off the market. It all just like went by so, so fast, and we had absolutely no time to think about our decision. So we decided to try and start looking at some older homes, because another thing is that what we saw in these turnkey homes is that with the current inventory of new homes, a lot of times very cheap material is being used, because everyone wants the aesthetic of a new, clean, contemporary-looking home. And I feel like the styles of homes have changed drastically just within, like, the past, what, like, 5 or 10 years? Mm-hmm. So these builders are sort of putting in the cheapest, best-looking materials that are hollow, not well-built, if you look into details of it. Not saying that that happens all the time, but looking at the houses that we looked at, that was the case for a lot of the homes that are quick, fast, turnkey homes.
I feel like you have so much insight. Like, can you give us an example of what is these cheap materials versus like a good material?
Yeah, I mean, one example is just like doors, right? If you knock on one of like the doors, there's a difference between hollow doors and solid doors. So the doors might have like no soundproofing, or it just might be a hollow door, but it's a door, right? From the outside. If you honestly only have like 20 minutes to look at a house, which is like the house viewing, and then you have to make a decision within a week, it's like, oh yeah, there's a door, it's great. But then you start using it and it's just like, why can I hear everything? Or even like
walls.
The walls being super thin, and like the drywall being just very, because so the thing that we noticed with our current home, which is a 1950s or 60s home, is that the drywall had like an additional layer of concrete, had an additional layer of like metal mesh that made it like super sturdy. Versus now with the new homes, it's just like a piece of drywall. So super thin, easy to wear down. But you can't see that stuff, right? Because from the naked eye, it's just like a wall is a wall. But it's, you know, the question of what is in the foundation of this home and is it actually built well? And that you can't see.
That's sneaky.
It is. Yeah. It is. Yeah. So that's why once we started getting insight to what materials were being used to build these new homes, and our real estate agent and friend, Mike, he had a lot of insight to this too. So he'd be like, look at these windows. Like, they're not even closing well. Or, you know, it's just like little things that are not put in. It was clearly haphazardly put together just to make it aesthetically look pleasing. So once we started to notice that, we decided, okay, let's go for like a 1950s, 60s, 70s home and work on just flipping it. And honestly, Philip and I did not have the experience nor the time, but we just decided to go for it. And luckily, our friend and real estate agent, Mike, had a really good contractor whom we're honestly so thankful for. A good contractor does make a big difference in your flipping experience. And yeah, now a few months later, we, you know, love our home, and it looks so different from when we first walked in here. It looks like a home that we would have paid that top dollar for.
Would you say you'd save more money flipping a house than buying a turnkey home?
Absolutely. Yeah, because for sure we've added on a couple of probably hundreds of thousands of dollars to the value of this home versus how much we put into the flipping of the home. So
interesting, because I think sometimes, like, as someone who's not really into like the, not aware of the home buying process, that people always think like, oh, contractors and like flipping your home or like renovating is so expensive. Like, it is, but like compared to buying a freshly made, you don't know how the quality of the home is, right?
Yeah, you don't know the quality. And I think our real estate agent also said that there's like a 20% markup once it is a flipped home from how much you paid for it previously. So it's a pretty good deal, but obviously it does take a lot of time and a lot of energy.
Yeah.
And to be honest, it's hard, but it's like once you get through that experience and get to the end of that road, it's you'll be glad that you did it.
Yes. And I won't, sorry, I have all these questions for you actually, because yeah. I feel like Helen's my, like a lot of my friends are buying houses, but Helen's like my close friend that I'm seeing her day to day of like her process of buying a home, renovating a home. But I think when you guys found this place, you had to act really fast. Like there wasn't like a week to decide. You're like, no, we got to know now.
Yeah. Yeah. It was a little too fast because I think right when we had decided we're going to start looking at older homes, this was like the second home that we saw that was a little bit older. And I didn't have like the vision for what it could look like. And I was only 70% into buying this house. And it's like, this is the biggest purchase of my freaking life. And
yeah.
the 10 years of working and everything I've been saving up for, is this really going to be it? You know, and it has to be. Like, I can't buy two homes right now at once.
Yeah.
So Philip was like all in. And we actually had a conversation the night before we made the decision, which was only like 5 days after we looked at the house.
Mm-hmm.
And Philip was like, this is it. I'm like, no, I can't do this one. I need to see a few more, see what the market is like. I mean, give us like another, at least like five homes to look at. But just given how fast things are being picked up right now, I think he just had that instinct of like, this is a good foundation. You know, we're not close to neighbors. There's a lot of privacy, a lot of safety. And it is just a good, you know, starter home. And we're going to only be here for 5 years is what he told me. So I was like, fine. And then I went with it. And at first I was reluctant, but now it's like, okay, fuck, you were right.
Yeah. Like I remember Helen coming back to Jan and I, and she was like, y'all, look at this place. And it was, she took a photo of the different rooms, and all the different rooms have different like colored carpet.
Oh,
and
it was so ugly.
And I was like, I don't really, but I think the fact that you guys had foresight and like, if we flipped it, it looked like this. And now we're walking in, like, it smells like a new home. Everything's beautiful. So I think it was a good decision you guys made.
Yeah.
Also, I need to share that flipping this home was not an easy task. Like, when Helen said her and Phil were not, like, ready for it, like, the things, the little nook, the littlest detail you had to know kind of blew my mind. Like, what doorknob or what wiring, these little things you just had to, like, kind of research on the spot when your contract would ask you, right?
Yeah.
I think this is the stuff that I didn't know you had to go through as someone who's flipping their house.
Yeah, I think you have to really have a vision for what you want in your space. And what happens first is always electricity and plumbing. So even for our kitchen, when you have like the walls completely off, you're like, okay, where do you want to put your light switches? Where do you want to put your lights? Where do you, if you want a pot filler, like, do you want to, you know, get piping water into this area? Because that's going to cost more money. So you have to have that full vision of what you want in each room before even like sitting down and like designing it. And I thought that was tough for me because I was like, okay, well, do everything first and then let me see what it looks like and then I will pick things out. But it's like, no, where are your bed? If you want bedroom wall sconces, how big is your bed going to be? Is it a queen size? Is it a king size? Where do you want to position the sconce? How high is your bed going to be? It's like, I don't even have a bed yet. I don't know.
You
just have to like think about all this stuff beforehand. So that was probably the most difficult part because we did not have designers help us out. And we just kind of had to wing it.
Yeah. Oh, another tip that I feel like I gained as like, you know, an onlooker or an observer of you purchasing your home is that once you guys locked in and bought your place and that you guys said, let's get the contractors in ASAP because you don't want to be, because you're spending money still, like not moving to your new house if it's
Need
something to renovate it, right?
Yeah. Ideally, it was because we're paying two mortgages now for our condo in downtown LA and this house. So ideally, you move in as fast as possible to this new house and rent out our condo.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what we were trying to rush forward with.
Yeah.
And paying double mortgage is not that easy, y'all.
yeah, for sure.
Yeah, I mean, I could probably like go on and on about all the things I learned. I think the points I gave were only like two or three points, but I'm not going to take up this whole episode by talking about this. If anyone out there is interested in hearing more content like this, let us know in the comments of our IG post for this episode, and maybe we'll consider doing more tips about first-time home buying. I mean, Janet's a first-time home buyer too, and we can have another episode on that.
Well, that was fun reflecting back on all the places that we've lived. I felt like we just like did a jog down memory lane from everyone's like different living situations.
I feel like I learned about the lives you had before ABG through this episode, actually.
Yeah. And I think also just for anyone out there who is curious about what it's like to move to LA, the living situations, where best to live, who to ask, Janet, about living locations. Like, hopefully this was a good overview for any of you out there that's looking to move to LA.
Yeah. If you don't already, please follow us on Spotify, subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, leave us a rating and review, and share this episode with your friends. You can also support us through monthly donations at anchor.fm/asianbossgirl/support or get some merch at asianbossgirl.myshopify.com.
If you resonated with today's episode, let us know in the comments of our IG post. And if you'd like to put faces to our names, you can find us on YouTube, where we share vlogs, an audience Q&A segment called Dear ABG, and much more. Our handle on both platforms is @AsianBossGirl.
We do have a couple shout-outs for this episode. To Georgie from Zana, looking forward to our next endeavors. To Q from Fu from Australia, thanks for being a great girlfriend and always being so supportive. To Keisha from Victoria from Chicago, I know work's been a little crazy lately, but you're handling it with such grace and doing such an amazing job. Love ya. And lastly, to Megumi from Camila from Peru, happy birthday, Megumi. Wishing you the best.
If you'd like to send a shout-out to a friend, check out our link tree in our link in bio on our Instagram and click on shout-outs. And last but not least, thank you to our super talented editor, Michelle, for working all her magic on our episodes, including this one.
We will catch you guys on the next one.
Bye! Bye.